Welcome back to Bullseye on the Afternoon on AM 930 WEOL and the new 100.3 FM. Andy Bulbarch and Matt Douglas with you. And time now for us to talk a little Browns on our Budweiser's From the Sidelines segment presented by North Ridgeville Convenience Sunoco. And here to do that with us is Fox 8's very own John Telich. John, as always, my friend, a pleasure catching up with you. How are you?
I'm doing great. Top of the Wednesday to you and, of course, to all your amazing listeners you have.
Well, we are coming up on the dress rehearsal just a couple days away, and, you know, certainly no shortage of storylines throughout this incredible camp that we've witnessed so far. The Browns right now have certainly become on a big, big part of the national radar, and they certainly have a bullseye on their back. How do you think they've handled that so far?
Well, I think they've been pretty good about it, and leading the way is Freddie Kitchens. He is so natural and down to earth. When he was asked yesterday about, you know, are you worried there's a bullseye on your back because of the Baker Mayfield thing with Daniel Jones and then OBJ saying he was sent to Cleveland by the Giants to die, you know, and how are those comments from these guys going to be construed around the league? Do you think people, you know, have a huge, you have a big bullseye on your back? And he's just so natural. I mean, came back and said, you know, I don't even know what a bullseye is. They have been so kind of, you know, circled the wagons, as it were, kept themselves, all the noise as much as possible away from them, and they're getting the work in. And I think so far you're seeing a team that is, which was his plan, trying to get together and come together in camp, and that's exactly what's happening as we stand here now, you know, a couple of weeks away from when it actually starts meaning something. But I think all in all, he's had a good camp, a productive camp, and with all this talent that's in town and the notoriety of some of the athletes like OBJ and Jarvis and Miles and Baker, they're very, very comfortable in their own skin, and they're very comfortable in the spotlight. So I think, by and large, they've handled it pretty well.
What do you make of the whole situation with Baker making the comments that he made about Daniel Jones? Seems like on the surface, much ado about nothing, but you know how this works. These things always seem to get blown out of proportion, and I guess earlier today he did the best he could to kind of clear the air there as well, but it seems like this was a story for a day, but it's very, very slowly beginning to fade.
Well, yeah, that's kind of what the day we live in, this, you know, this day and age of stories that get hot, liquid hot, fast, and for a matter of hours, and everybody has an overreaction to it. Everybody loses their minds over how on earth could this guy have said this about Daniel Jones. And in reality, when Baker clarified things today, he said it was different conversations, and he really should learn. If he's doing an interview with any reporter, he should record it as well, you know, just so he can say, hey, this is not what I said, or I said it in this manner, I meant that. And so he basically said that, yeah, I mean, wasn't the football, weren't you there the night of, you know, the night of the first night of the draft on that Thursday evening in Nashville when they made the pick and the Giants took Dan? Everybody in football was like, what in the world is this? So Baker basically stated that, but he also said that, hey, I admit that I felt it was crazy I was taken number one. And then he clarified about, you know, winning should mean something. And I get his comments about that. You're going to draft a quarterback very high in the draft who did not have a winning record in college. And you can say all you want about what the potential is, and I know that's what they try to do in the NFL draft, is project how this guy will transform his game from the collegiate level to the pro level, but this guy was not even a winning quarterback at Duke. And so, you know, Baker Mayfield, coming from a very much of a winning program at Oklahoma, probably thought that a bit odd. And, you know, Baker does not have an edit switch in his brain. He says what's on his mind, and that's great for some people, whereas other people, they can't even stand it. So he's a very polarizing kind of a figure.
He is. No filter, as you mentioned. Yep. And I think that's why so many people around here love him, and that's why they take to him the way that they do.
Exactly.
All right, John, got to get your thoughts on the running back situation here, too. A lot of the conversation surrounding that position has been around, or I guess it was around Duke Johnson. Obviously, much of it circulating around the expectations for Nick Chubb as well and Kareem Hunt if he comes back later on this year. What about a guy like D'Ernest Johnson? What kinds of things has he shown in camp so far?
Well, he has been really good, and I've enjoyed seeing what he's done so far in the extended action that he got last week in game number two. I thought you saw a kid that has the natural instincts coming out of the backfield, catching the ball. He scored a touchdown via a pass. He ran the ball pretty well. I think he had 10 carries, about 53 yards. So, you know, there's something there. You have Dontrell Hilliard, who was hurt. Now he's back on the field and has been practicing the last couple of days. So you have that aspect. Kareem got a couple of carries. You know, he got a few snaps over the down there in game number two. So he's in the mix, but obviously will be put on the shelf for 8 weeks. I think they're pretty well stocked in terms of the running back position, knowing that Nick Chubb is a very durable kind of a running back and explosive player. And so with him being healthy for the lion's share of the season and with the prospect of, if all things go well, Kareem getting into the picture in the ninth game of the season, I think they are really stocked well at the running back position. And I've said I think Nick is one of the major building blocks of this football team, and you have to give Dorsey credit for, number one, obviously drafting him and seeing something there, and then number two, making it apparent early in the season that this kid's got to get on the field, and pulling off the trade that he did to open up the room so that Nick Chubb could get on the field last year when Hugh was still the coach.
Again, you're dialed into our Budweiser's From the Sidelines segment presented by North Ridgeville Convenience Sunoco. We're being joined by Fox 8's very own John Telich. Garrett Gilbert, a guy that certainly turned some heads, especially in that preseason game over the weekend. He seems to be the odds-on favorite to be the number two, although Freddie Kitchens, I think, isn't really willing to hand it over to him just yet, given the relationship with Drew Stanton. But what do you make of his performance over the weekend?
I think it was really good, and I was impressed with – he's just very much natural back in the pocket. And where did this come from? Well, you know, he's kind of been a journeyman guy, you know, hasn't he? Been a journeyman guy for some time in his career, and yet in the bottom line is you've got a guy had an extra chance in that league in the spring or when it was a wintertime, springtime, and that bolstered his opportunity to get signed by the Browns and then to play. I liked what I saw. He reads and makes quick decisions and gets rid of the football, and that's obviously what the other Lake Travis High School quarterback does well, Bowl, and that is, of course, Baker Mayfield.
And speaking of Baker Mayfield, you know, it's been very, very difficult to find a rhyme or a reason to what Freddie Kitchens does with the handling of his players in preseason games, and everybody's very, very intrigued by what he might do for the dress rehearsal this Friday. Any idea how much Baker and the starters may play on Friday?
Absolutely no idea, Bull, and that's how it was last week. We had no indication from Freddie. He's not like Hugh Jackson was, and many other coaches for that matter, who will come out a couple of days in advance of a preseason game and say, all right, we're going to play the ones for the first quarter and a half and then the twos. And, you know, we'll start with Baker here, and then Gilbert's going to get the snaps throughout the third quarter, and then we'll finish up with David Blau or whatever. Has not done that. And so nobody really had it on the radar that Baker wasn't even going to play a snap the other day in game number two. And so we're all kind of scrambling now, wondering is this going to be a true dress rehearsal like we've seen from so many teams over the years in a four preseason game schedule? And we have no idea, because Freddie has said publicly that, you know, just because things are done a certain way in the past doesn't mean, you know, we are going to do things in that particular way. So we're kind of left to guess as to how – now, should he play? I think he should play a quarter. But, again, you've got to be judicious and know that this is a long season. And I think they've gotten the work done on the practice field, and that's where they base a lot of their analysis on where the team is going, how well they practice in those joint practices with the Colts last week, very proficient in that regard. And then that was why – Freddie decided to sit so many of his frontline guys last week. Now, maybe some of the guys that sat last week might get some snaps this week, but I really don't know. And I think if you ask any other media member out there, we're all kind of just kind of trying to guess what Freddie's going to do.
Anything further really kind of set in stone at the right guard spot? I know that's been a heavily scrutinized position all throughout camp.
Yeah.
How concerned should we be about that spot?
Well, the offensive line coach said that the starting right guard is here in Cleveland. I mean, he's been in camp, and right now you would assume it's Eric Kush because he's gotten a long period of time to be the right guard, but that's still really not etched in stone. So we've seen some snaps from Drew Forbes at that right guard position. Maybe they'll work him in the next couple of games and see what they have there. They've got the other four spots nailed down, and that's good. And they just want to make sure, I believe, you know, that Kush is the guy for them. I guess what we're seeing more than anything is that experiment of maybe Austin Corbett as the right guard and the high draft choice that they used to get him. Well, right now you spent the number 33, wasn't a real high draft pick last year, on a guy who's just basically the backup center. And you're probably, if that is the case, that's all well and good. But J.C. Treader's got more tread on his tires, and he's a very good player. So I don't think, the Browns might be looking ahead, you know, in terms of like, well, J.C. Treader's going to soon have to be paid. You know what I'm saying? And so maybe they're thinking that you get Austin Corbett ready in the event that you maybe want to slide him into that center position. But I wouldn't hand the keys of the car over to Austin Corbett at center, not with J.C. Treader on this football team. J.C. Treader needs to play. He's a tough – he embodies pretty much what Freddie said. You know, let's play tough football. This guy played with a high ankle sprain much of last year, and he's a durable player, and I think it'd be crazy to, you know, to push this guy aside and go ahead with Austin Corbett. So we'll see what happens at that right guard position. They have two more games, and they've got to kind of lock a guy in and go from here.
Well, if there's one position that's been more heavily scrutinized than right guard, it would certainly be the kicking situation. And it just seems like that becomes less and less clear by the day as to who's going to win that job. What do you make of what the Browns have going on with the kicker position right now?
Yeah, it's just been very inconsistent, which leads all kinds of speculation to be able to bubble to the surface. Like yesterday, you know, the fact that the Scottish Hammer, the punter, was out there kicking 60-yard field goals on his own using one of those tees only fueled the fire. And, of course, Freddie, you know, laughed it off, but then basically said, hey, if you can kick a 60-yarder, he was talking to one of the reporters, I think it was Daryl Ryder, but he said, if you can kick a 60-yarder, then, you know, then I'll put your, you know, one out there. So they're concerned, and I'm sure they have an idea of what other kickers are out there that they could go after and bring in here. But you also have to keep in mind, I think there's two or three other teams that are having similar situations with their kickers. And so if they have a guy in mind, they probably have to know that they can bring that person in. It's just everything that you see when these guys line up. It's just they don't look like they're really super confident about hitting it. The team kind of gives off that vibe, and the fans give off the vibe. It's just not a situation that you want to go into the season uncertain about, especially when you have so much talent that has a chance to, if they have all the kicks lining up the right way, get off to a real good start and make a playoff push.
John, before we let you go, I want to hit on something that you mentioned on Twitter a few days ago. Jake Burns had tweeted something out talking about how strange it is that college football doesn't really get any preseason games, yet the NFL gets four. You responded with something pretty interesting. You mentioned that you've got to believe we'll see some more controlled scrimmages and preseason games will be mostly just backup auditions and spot situations where starters are going to get very little time. And I think you ended it by putting that just delivering the hammer, mentioning that fans getting the short end of the stick mostly. And I want to give you a chance to explain that, because I think you're 100% right. It just seems as though the way the preseason has progressed the last few years, you're just not seeing nearly as many of the stars participating.
I think the fans would be far more engaged with their home team if they had an opportunity to see their favorite players against their favorite players of another team for an extended period of time, let's say 2 days, like the Browns and the Colts did. And so you get a chance to see these high-level practices and some great spirited football that's controlled by the team, which in my mind means, well, the quarterbacks can't get hit, which is good, and because the quarterbacks are everything. And so you get a spirited competition. You evaluate guys in the way that you want to evaluate. You can even say, all right, we're going to script a two-minute offense here, or we're going to start at this yard line, and we're going to go 5 minutes with our offense and see how many plays we can get in. Anything that you want to do, I think the fans would really be engaged by watching that. They wouldn't pay anything to see it, or they could even charge nominal things for charity or whatever. But I think the fans would get more of an appreciation for the work that goes into being ready for September 8th or 9th than if they just went to these exhibition games, four of which hardly anybody plays, hardly any of the games, and they're being charged an outrageous figure to go to the game in the first place because they want to keep their season tickets, and it's just not fair. So I think if you had two exhibition games and then two instances where you had a joint practice with another team, heck, the Patriots have been doing it, and I think the Browns had a good experience in Indy. So just expand that. Have two sessions of joint practices, only two exhibition games, spread them out, same amount of period of time, but just don't make the fans have to pay for those two exhibition games. And then, of course, you would have the season of 18 games and go from there. Or if you don't expand the season in the regular season, maybe you change the makeup of how the playoffs are constructed to give more teams a chance to get in the postseason. But the current system of fans getting built for this idiotic instance where they've got to pay the full price to see hardly anybody that's a favorite player of theirs on the field, it's just not fair. It's not fair to the fans, and the league's been pretty arrogant about its stance towards not changing it. I think it's high time they do.
I think we could certainly all agree with that, no doubt about it. Well, John, we appreciate the time as always. Thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to doing this again next week when we'll be heading into the final preseason game of the 2019 season. John, we appreciate the time as always. Thank you.
You got it, buddy. I look forward to the next time. Talk to you then.
Thank you, John. Again, that's Fox 8's very own John Telich joining us here on the Budweiser's From the Sidelines segment presented by North Ridgeville Convenience Sunoco. Time for a break here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. Matt Douglas and I will return after this here on AM 930 WEOL and the new 100.3 FM.